Hi, this is Mark DeClive Lowe, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
WGXC is always looking for new programmers to volunteer at your community radio station. Email info@wgxc.org if you have all sorts of terrific music you want to share with your friends and neighbors, or if you want to join in the greater community conversation on the radio at 90.7 FM. Programmers learn how to do their own radio show and podcast, and how to make audio adventures interesting for listeners. You can call the WGXE Hudson studio at 518-697-7400 or email info@wgxc.org if you're interested in hosting a program or working with others on or off the air on WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Anna Coville of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Sweet Tuesday chose me. I want to thank her, thank her, thank her. I want to Once again, you're listening to the Capital District Democratic Socialist Good Time Hour on WGXC 90.7 on your FM dial. I'm your host, Casey, with my co-host, Bill, who prefers to be called by the pretentious alias of Poche Noire.
Bonsoir, comrades. Poche Noire in the airwaves. It's 7 p.m. on the first Tuesday of the month, as we always do broadcast. So this is Election Day, November 5th, 2024. And as is known to Sans-Culottes and Communards, as the 15th day of the historic month of Brumaire in the year 233 in the French Republican calendar. And that intro was Everything's Tuesday by the chairman of the board, because everything, of course, is all about today, this Tuesday.
Tonight, we have a special guest, Hudson Common Council President and DSA member Tom DiPietro, who will tell us all about the nuts and bolts of being a socialist in office and of the recent passage of good cause eviction in Hudson. Take note, this broadcast is pre-recorded. Tonight is actually Sunday the 27th. Bill and I are together. Good cause eviction passed in Hudson on October 15th, and there will be a public hearing on November 13th in the village of Catskill to hopefully pass good cause eviction then. Mm-hmm. We are pre-recording because I'm working the polls on election night, and Poche Noire will probably be a little tipsy from some whiskey watching the results come in.
Yes, that is probably true. Again, let's make the standard disclaimer. The remarks made tonight reflect the opinions of whomever may be speaking them, and not those of anybody officially from WGXC. Also, those remarks don't necessarily reflect the opinions of other members of the Capital District Democratic Socialists of America. Casey, Tom, and myself are just a couple of members of the DSA, and because we live in these here parts, we're a part of the Capital District's chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. There is no set political line to be towed by members of the DSA. DSA membership is welcome to all. And to be a DSA member, you don't have to have any kind of schooling or anything like that. You don't have to be a strict Marxist, as am I. So let's take another musical break before we get to our interview.
Down. job costs a living too. Say, go help the blind senior citizen too. But when he gets in, Lord, you know it's just the other way. Boy, you can't do no more. He rich, you poor. Be careful how you vote. Be careful how you vote. Be careful how you vote. Lord, be careful how you vote. The one that you vote for, he just might let you down. Be careful how you vote, people.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Hi, Jason. Hi, girl.
As Bill was saying earlier, Tom, a fellow DSAer and WGXC host and elected.
And a grandfather, my favorite.
And grandfather. Amazing. We'd love to hear about all of the above.
I'll start with the last. I'm a grandfather of four beautiful grandchildren, which has distracted me marvelously for the last couple of years, and reminds me partly why I'm in this whole racket, if you will. You know, it's like when you think about your children and then your children's children, and you see the way the country's going, it kind of creates a certain sense of not so much urgency, but like trying to preserve the best of what's still here and preventing the worst of what seems to always be impending, you know? Anyway, that's kind of how I got started in this whole, as you know, I'm a fellow DSAer, and while I haven't, you know, sort of made that a big part of my campaign, I've never hidden it. I'll never forget when I first, well, my first job was I was appointed chairman of the planning board, which was a great way to start learning local politics. One of the things you realize slowly in this world of local politics is that real estate is a huge dimension of it. And
is this for Hudson, just to clarify?
For Hudson, sorry, yeah. I'm the Common Council President of the City of Hudson. And especially in Hudson, where things are booming and changing so constantly. But, you know, partly related to this whole, if you've ever read this book by Sam Stein, I think his name is, it's a Verso book called, and it's about the financialization of the real estate world. I mean, there's always been a lot of interest in real estate, and it's determined a lot of things, but when Wall Street got interested in real estate in a way it had never been before, it kind of changed a lot of things in terms of who invests where and how they invest. And then, of course, the opportunity zones that were written into law under Trump. All of Hudson is an opportunity zone. So that when that became known, a lot of big time out of town investors have approached Hudson. So these are, oh, go ahead.
I just, can you elaborate on what an opportunity zone is?
Opportunity zone. It's supposed to be a way of incentivizing investors into areas that are depressed economically. And what it does is you can take your capital gains, which of course all of us have tons of those, and invest them and pay no taxes. Okay. There's a lot of rules about it. But my understanding, every time somebody tries to investigate or look into it, they find that nobody seems to be really paying attention to these rules. You know, the investments have to be of a certain kind. You can't just park money, because that would be the temptation. If you had like $1 million that you didn't want to pay capital gains on, go buy a building and just let it sit there. Mm-hmm. But according to the rules, you're supposed to do things. Now, whether they are or not, not clear. But anyway, it attracted money to Hudson. At one point, Hudson was totally an opportunity zone. Now, here's the problem with opportunity zones in general. You can define a depressed little area, and in some of the big cities, those depressed little areas are next to fully developed areas. So you buy the next building over, and you know, you're still in a, you're not really doing a great deed for anybody. But anyway, there we go.
And that seems to be a really great means for gentrification as well.
Totally. I mean, there's, it's not, you can't just buy a house or something. You gotta, I forget what the limit is, but you have to have serious money. And like everything in real estate.
Now, capital gains are even taxed lower than regular.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
Now you can escape even getting taxed on your capital gains by buying real estate in an opportunity zone.
Correct.
Wow.
And it's just another way of giving more to the wealthy. Very few of us ever get any kind of tax abatement, but anybody who's developing, and this is a problem in Hudson too, more directly, if you're a developer, you're going to take advantage of everything that a developer can take advantage of. And one mm-hmm. of the things they can take advantage of are tax abatements. They go for what are called pilots, payments in lieu of taxes, and don't pay the full amount of average property tax. Now, the benefit is supposed to be that, oh, well, they're developing, they're building something, you know, and building is great, employs people, you know, and all those other things. But, you know, you got to measure it. On whose back are all these things happening? And that is the average taxpayer who gets no breaks about anything.
Somehow presumes that taxation is somehow hurting people. Wrong. Somehow it's
wrong, right?
You know?
Right. That's the whole thing, you know? If the tax system was operating fairly, I'd like to think most people wouldn't object to it the way they do. One of the problems here in Hudson is, you know, we keep the city tax pretty low. It's not a lot, but we get really creamed in our school tax. A lot of the people who complain, obviously, are people who don't have children in the school. That's a no-brainer that they're the complainers of. But it's like, do you believe in democracy? Do you believe in public schools as like a cornerstone of the democratic system? Most of us do, I think. And, you know, we're happy to pay that tax. Now, then you get into the argument that, you know, the schools don't function well, blah, blah, blah. That's a whole nother topic. And I don't really know much about it because we have this unique situation here in Hudson. We don't control our school system. We're not the only municipality that participates in the Hudson. It's called the Hudson School District, but it includes Park to Clover Rock, mm-hmm. Greenport, Livingston. I've left out one or two, Stottville, something else. So it's very confusing to try to get any involvement with the school system unless you get on the school. And frankly, you could probably make more of a difference getting on a school board than say getting on the Hudson City Council, because there's a lot more money. We're talking about a budget of close to $60 million. The city of Hudson's budget is about 14, 15. Wow. So if you look at it in that regard, you're talking about a much bigger expense, mm-hmm. Tax money being spent. Of course, it's not all from directly from taxes. A lot of the school budget comes from the state. That's a whole nother issue.
And that's a guest for another day.
Yeah.
The Hudson School Board.
Yeah. So these are all the kind of issues you get involved with when you get involved with local politics. And that's always been the inspiration as a democratic socialist. Yes, it was great that we had a resolution supporting a ceasefire in Gaza, but I also knew it had no kind of immediate consequence. It's not like the president's going to see that and cut off funds to the Israelis. It does matter, though, in this sense. If enough municipalities do it, and many have, and, you know, a lot of local, at least our congressman becomes aware that there are significant groups in his district that are opposed to the current policy. So sometimes you can get a little say in national politics, but you really...
Or even state politics. Suppose New York State wanted to divest.
Exactly.
All of those things are very important.
Exactly. Someone came up to me the other day and was like saying, I really was happy you guys did your resolution. Where are your investments? I laughed. I was like, investments? We don't have them. But if we did, you know, that would have been something we could have done. Anyway, it wasn't easy, by the way. But I did find out during that something that I think is true on the national level. Among Jewish Americans, it's very much a generational thing. Older Jewish people who have a much greater awareness of the Holocaust and have parents who may have been growing up completely in the penumbra of the Holocaust are much different than people, say, 40 or under, who just aren't motivated in the same way about Israel that some of the older people are. And that was proven in the support we got, because, you know, Hudson has a lot of young people and they were overwhelmingly in support. And the few voices we heard not in support were mostly people 50 or 60 and older. But it was, you know, it was controversial and we got it through. But again, like I said, to be a democratic socialist and be involved in local politics, for me, it came out of my understanding of the history of American socialism. And I distinctly say American. I'm sure you guys have heard of the sewer socialists. You know, these were the municipal electeds, a lot of them in the Midwest, quite a few actually in Schenectady. Schenectady had a socialist mayor. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about, you know, destroying capitalism so much as good government, you know, good, honest, fair government as much as you can. And one of the things you try to do in a small town like Hudson is make sure it's completely honest and open. And that's always been a big part of mine. We do all our meetings now, you know, we don't have to, but we do all our meetings completely open with online access and participation. We post them all afterwards so you can watch them if you weren't able to make it. And not very few other municipalities are doing this, but that's the first step to open government, letting everybody see what's going on.
Well, I invited other members of the Capital District Democratic Socialists to tomorrow night's
great.
That is, I should say, October 15th for the listening audience. We're doing this on October 14th since our broadcast is going to be on Election Day. So this is a pre-recorded interview because we're all going to be sitting at home biting our fingernails.
There's I'm working the polls
or getting people out to vote. So tomorrow night, that is October 15th, I'm going to attend the Common Council meeting with regard to good cause eviction.
Good cause eviction. Now, as you probably know, there was a previous effort to get good cause eviction that got very little traction, and with traction in the places it did get passed, it was defeated in the courts. So there was enough momentum on the state level to do something that the Democrats came up with this version of good cause eviction. Now, the thing that stuns me about this whole process is if you're a good landlord, you don't have anything to fret. If you're a good landlord, what are you so worried about? You know, you can, according to this law, you can still raise your rent. You can still, there's a built-in percentage you can raise without doing anything. And then they're
quite generous.
It's very generous to landlords. There are three things you get to choose. One is whether you want to opt in. That's number one. So that's where we come in, and you know, you say yes or no. Two is, how do you define a small landlord? And it's anywhere from one and increasing to 10. We're sticking with one. I'll tell you why in a second. And then the third thing is something to do with the maximum that just are not even considered. That's less important to us. You know, going back to the financialization of real estate, there are plenty of LLCs and groups that buy houses and apartments, and you know, and they hide behind LLCs and you don't know who they are. So you could say you're a small landlord with one unit, but that might be one LLC that has that unit, and then under another name it has another unit. So you know, it's just as important that one landlord. But the biggest,
this is massively insightful because I believe that's for Catskill. Mm-hmm. Like, there's good cause eviction that's being reposted in Catskill right now, and I think they're doing four or more. Yeah,
they're gonna go four.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe that's a compromise they had to make. You know, I mean, I think the argument that I just made was actually made in a couple of meetings and was persuasive enough. But there are so many exemptions. If you live in your building, up to 10, you can live in a building with 10 other or 9 other, I'm not sure exactly 9 or 10, if you're the 10th, or and you would be exempt. As you can imagine, there are many landlords who do that up to 10. There are plenty who do it maybe for one or three. The biggest opposition was a couple of members who kept talking about statistics of who will be affected and how will they be affected. And this to me was a phony argument, because if this law protects 10 renters, I'm for it. The problem was, and this was demonstrated way back when there was an effort to put in EPTA, which stood for
Emergency Tenant Protections Act.
And something had to do with like how many units, you had to find out how many units and the vacancy rate and all that stuff. And it was impossible. No landlord's going to voluntarily tell you that he or she has so many amounts of so many numbers of units. It's just not, people are asking for information that's just not available. So, you know, you got to make a certain leap of faith. Then there were those who said, well, you know, now some landlords will just kick out their tenants and leave it empty or sell it or whatever and say, love it. You know, the old saying, the perfect is the enemy of the good. Everybody looks for loopholes. Every law you pass, there's people looking. I mean, if it's any restriction on anything, there's always somebody looking for a loophole. I like to think of the analogy. My wife worked for the Securities Exchange Commission for many years. And people were like, how didn't you get this? How didn't you catch this? How didn't you catch me? Well, you know what? Every time the SEC or the government regulates something, the financial world comes up with something new to get around whatever it is they just outlined. They're always one step ahead, the nature of their game. Mm-hmm. Same thing on a local level. The lawyers are always going to be looking to... there were lawyers trying to stop all the Airbnb regulations, but they lost, thank goodness. And we were really way ahead on that. And I think it's had very good consequences in Hudson. You know, it's very restricted, and these absentee Airbnbers just can't exist anymore.
Tom, how long have you been the president of the Common Council, and what was your position, your elected position before that, if you had one?
I didn't.
You went from planning board to
Common Council. This is my 7th year, so my 4th term or 2-year terms. Oh, I was going to say, the first year, I never sort of publicized my DSA membership, but my early on meeting with the future mayor, who is no longer mayor, I said, you do realize I'm a democratic socialist, and that's going to be the kind of underpinning of most of what I do and what I want to do. And he just kind of looked befuddled by what that meant. Well,
that was probably not a term he even understood.
Right. You know, I knew that's why I didn't want to make a big deal of it. And otherwise, because there's still people who think socialism, communism, blah, blah, blah. I've always, my own turn to socialism was always very much rooted in American history, my study of American radical movements, my love of Eugene Debs, my interest in social critics like Christopher Lash, who was a socialist for most of his career, and people like that, you know, moving towards a localist view, you know, I get it. But one of the things I do like about DSA is that it is a big umbrella organization, and we don't, you know, we tolerate Trotskyists like you, Bill, and you know, it's like, and frankly, I wouldn't freak out if I knew there were a communist or two lurking around. And the big difference is, of course, in the history of American radicalism, is that the old commies, you know, had a different agenda, many of them, you know, mm-hmm. with their love of Moscow and all that stuff. The only people who love Moscow is Donald Trump and his cronies.
Yeah, there's the times they have truly changed, huh?
Since you brought up the subject, have you done any pondering of what actions the Hudson Common Council could do if Trump is elected?
It's funny you mention that. You know, we did the first time. We declared ourselves a sanctuary city, and we still are. And I've worked closely with the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, just started, co-started by Brian McCormick and a bunch of others. We've been very strong. We had a Latinx gathering a month or so ago. It was unbelievable how many county Latinos and Latinas came to this event. It was unbelievable, as big as Flag Day or Winter Walk. And it was really, and the cool thing was everybody was displaying the flag of their country of origin or ancestry. And it's, interestingly, I'm not sure, we've had a very hard time getting a handle on the Latin population of Hudson. I think a lot of Latin people are living in the county and working on farm. Although you can notice also in the kitchens in Hudson, you'll find, but they seem to not, it's not clear. I mean, you'd really have to go apartment building to apartment building and see if, you know, with the population. It's very hard. Some groups are very hard to deal with in that regard. The Bengali population, which is significant, is very insular, especially the older generation. They tend to operate sort of like old school politicians in America, in that, you know, they decide who their representative is, and that's who speaks on everything, mm-hmm. like an old board boss. So it's very hard to reach for the older people because of the language barrier. It's not clear how many of the women are really free to participate. As the next generation is born here and everything, of course, they're completely different, and they're very active, and you know, they're great allies in so many things we do here. So what can you do if Trump gets elected? I hope, and this is the only silver lining I can see, is that you can once again mobilize people on more national issues. The ramifications for a city, it's hard to say in terms of policy for the city. I mean, we don't really get much federal funds directly anyway. We did apply for a federal grant during the Trump years and didn't get it. And some people were murmuring it's because we were a sanctuary city, but it's hard to know if a tiny sanctuary city gets written off. I will tell you that we did actively hound ICE agents when we found them in the city. I remember one day we were driving madly trying to run them out of the city. Mm-hmm. Because they'd shown up at a restaurant. I think the restaurant workers called either Brian or someone else, and suddenly there was like 30 of us down at this restaurant, and these two guys in a black van with no writing on it or anything pop out, but they looked like feds of a certain kind, and they kept trying to trick us. We would get into cars and follow them, because at first they were just gonna, they like went down to a couple blocks and came back to see if the crowd had dissipated, and it was quite a day. They did eventually drive across the bridge, and that's when we sort of gave up on following.
So
yeah, I kind of remember hearing about that. Like, didn't they try to arrest somebody coming, like leaving their job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were a couple incidents, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Mexican Radio, maybe? I can't remember the name of the place.
Yeah, I didn't want to, this one was Casa Latina.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think there were, and then they were seen poking around the basement of a church where, you know, there was some supportive work being done, and they were chased away. But anyway, you know, things like that happen. People will mobilize. It's there's a good.
They had no warrant.
You know, it's interesting. You know about these ICE warrants? They're very weird. They're not like conventional warrants. You might know all this, Bill, what I'm talking about.
I've never seen this warrant.
Yeah, they're not like a conventional warrant, and you don't have to. We actually call, in one case, Brian did this incredibly heroic thing. He grabbed a guy who was, the ICE people were trying to take him away. He rolls up his windows. The ICE people are banging on him with their warrant, and he seemed to know the law better than they did, and called up the local police, and the local police, you know, read it and made it clear they did not have a warrant to take in that person.
That's amazing.
But if that happens, you know, we'll get back in action for that. Don't mess with Hudson. We'll be singing when we're winning. We'll be singing. I get no doubt.
I get no doubt.
You say that you like, you didn't hide it, but you weren't open about it. Been an issue, you being a, you know, card-carrying member of the DSA?
Never.
Elected, no?
I'll tell you, at one point, there was a resolution put forward that Bill had written, and I mentioned that it came from DSA. I can't remember what it was. One of the council members at the time was making a negative comment, and I jumped on her and said, oh, are you red-baiting? And she got so nervous about that she backed down. So, Hudson's a liberal city,
yeah,
and I doubt they would want to be accused of that. Just because somebody claimed they're a socialist of some kind. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the problem, is you say that and then everybody wants, you know, they either just dismiss you or you have to explain what it is, you know, it is you are, and that you're definitely socialist in the both democratic and American veins. Sort of all begins with reading theory, or can, when you put together theory with your experience of the world and you say things are screwed, and they're partly screwed because of how you look at the history of capital and, you know, how it treats people and how people who, you know, are in the working class or the underprivileged classes are treated. Go through life thinking about that and being obsessed with it even and trying to figure out how you can make it a little bit better or stop it from getting worse, right?
Yeah. So I guess in that vein, do you have any advice or words of wisdom? I know there's some people talking about running for school board in Catskill and running for certain... Oh.
I think school
a bit more, or Greene County is, I think, a bit more red than Columbia.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the last countywide election went blue, which was, it was three major positions and they all won, mm-hmm. which was phenomenal, especially the district attorney position, because that was, you know, being run by the great Paul Chyka, and nobody wanted to defy him. And his hand-picked candidate lost, as did the two judge positions. So that was a big deal, because one of the judge positions was actually a pretty decent Republican named Bob Gibson, who runs the Department of Social Services. And, you know, he's a county guy. His brother was Chris Gibson, the congressman. And I've dealt with him. He's a great guy, actually. But, you know.
I would concur with that. Despite the fact that he's a Republican, I think Bob Gibson's a swell fellow.
Yeah. But, you know, now that we have the numbers Democrat, a lot of people just, as you know, vote their line. Anyway, he didn't win. So we are a bluer county. In Hudson, of course. But, you know, in Hudson, we have a coalition that's, I would say, further to the left, made up of a lot of different groups. Young people, ethnic people, working class people, you name it. And then we have kind of the wealthy Democrat, who are sort of more your basic neoliberal types. And they're the ones who are opposed to good cause eviction. They're opposed to affordable housing. And that's the biggest. Now, there's an issue. It's so funny. When the whole affordable housing issue came up in Hudson, I'll never forget this one guy writes, well, you know, that's a national issue that can only be solved nationally. And I'm like, what? This is like so not just a national issue. This is a national issue that you can help solve locally. Now, mm-hmm. interestingly, we already, you know, at the state level, Hochul has started this thing where you become a housing something community. I forget what the actual term is. But if you produce enough new housing, you get a rating that helps you get more money towards housing. Well, we didn't have to even build any. We had so much in the works, we automatically qualified. More importantly, we have a number of major projects in the works, and there's a lot of opposition, which is mostly ridiculous in my view. And of course, there are people who hear the word affordable housing and think it's all affordable housing goes from like the lowest percentage of the average median income, and that's a county determined figure. And it goes up to even over 100%. So let's say the average median income from a family of four is $70,000 at 100%, okay? So then you start going downwards to something as low as, I don't know, 30%. That might be a family that only makes $20,000 or $25,000. But you can even go over that into like 150% of a family that makes $100,000, which may seem like a ton of money, but if you're talking a family of four, you know, it's okay. But that family could not afford to buy a house in Hudson. So when you create affordable housing that stretches up and down that scale, there is a housing project in Hudson called Bliss Towers. It has outlived its usefulness. It's in terrible condition. Everybody who lives there was surveyed, questioned. They all would love to live in a better place. The best thing I can describe is it has an outer coating that's kind of like a rough, almost adobe looking kind of surface. Well, that has separated from the inner wall of the concrete and water gets down in there and everything is just, you know, it's mold, it's wet, it's falling apart. Now here's the kicker. to, you can't just displace all the people who live in Bliss Towers. You have to provide an alternative. If you're going to take it down, you have to provide alternative housing. That seems simple enough. Build another building for the 100 plus residents, 100 plus units that reside. Well, the problem is HUD doesn't provide enough money for that to, if you built the exact amount of units that are there, it could not survive because it would not bring in enough income based on the mostly Section 8 housing that's there. So the people at the Hudson Housing Authority have proposed sort of doubling the amount of units in the whole complex and increasing the upper level of affordability. That would provide the income to make it a sustainable project. I hope that's not too getting into the weeds, but it's really why it has to be done this way. And there's a lot of opposition. And, you know, when it comes push to shove, I'll be calling on you folks to come out for these meetings because it's a good project and it has to go through and it could be a beautiful part of the city.
Tom, is there a location for this project?
Yes.
Where?
It's sort of on the property where current Bliss Towers is across the street. And, you know, they've figured there's actually some space on the Bliss Towers property where they can build part of it and another part across the street and then take down Bliss and then build the extra buildings and a little, some of them offsite. It's not all just one big building. It's altogether like, oh, I think four bigger buildings and then three sort of townhouse buildings sort of offsite or near the site, which would be, those would be even for bigger families. So that would be phenomenal.
That would confer a huge benefit, not only for people in Hudson, but in the whole area here.
Exactly. The people who work here could live here, which is increasingly not possible.
Yeah.
The housing that a local developer is putting up right now is already being scoped out for like the people who work here, like the firemen who volunteer here can't live in Hudson. The new policemen couldn't live here. Some of the older ones, excuse me, bought when things were cheaper and do live in the city. But and there's another project that the city sort of sponsored that is two different sites and is getting a lot of opposition for a lot of the same ridiculous reasons, you know. One of these sites is in an area that gets flooded, and so everybody says, you can't build on a flooded in a floodplain, which is nonsense. You can build anywhere if you do it, create the proper drainage and build higher and all these things. So that's kind of like one of the things you discover in local government is everybody will find an excuse to defend or go against what it is they actually want. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like when someone's coming forward with a resolution to the council, if it's something they really want, they want it on the next agenda right away. If it's something they don't want, like happened last week, well, we should, a good cause eviction, maybe we should delay this another month until we get more statistics. And I'm like, no.
It did seem to me that there was, it was really protracted, the passage of good cause eviction. Was that because of a lot of opposition? Just playing
it's the because, it's because the legal committee wanted to consider it. And I said, okay, here's what happened. The legal committee wanted to consider it. And I said, okay, that, you know, by trying to skirt them, that would have then created its own issue. But I did say to them, look, make a decision one way or the other, because that's one of the few things by charter I do. I set the agenda for every common council meeting. So I was going to put it forward anyway, even if they said, you know, whatever they said, if they didn't come up with a decision. So it could have been prolonged even more. And then, of course, we had to work, and we've been working with all kinds of groups, including For the Many. They've been very helpful in terms of sending us really good documents in support. Not just, you know, pro saying we need housing documents, but really the hardcore facts about housing and how this all works. So, and a shout out to Raghavan, I think is his last name. I can't remember.
Raghavan, yeah. And Claire Cousin.
Yeah. Yep. Claire's a local supervisor who's, you know, shown up to the meetings too. So, you know, we have a good, I think we definitely have community support. And I think the one person who was very wobbly has been looking at where a lot of the supporters are coming from and finding that there's a lot of supporters in her ward. And I would never say it to them directly, but how you vote on this will be of consequence in a year when you go for re-election.
Yep.
And that's also true of the three people who are recusing themselves. which to me is just, you know, in the venue or in the meeting, we have a rule: you don't question motives. And I agree with that rule. It's a fine rule because, you know, that's just off base when you're in a meeting. But in fact, I think they're all scared of voting. Even those who are landlords and claim, you know, they would be, they're claiming conflict. Two of them are landlords. One's a tenant. Now the tenant, there's no conflict, but you know, it's just like, I think these three are just frankly afraid of voting on it and going on record as a yes or no. I've reminded them countlessly that abstaining or recusal is a no vote. It doesn't change. In other words, we're an 11 member council. This is for, I know you know this, but we're an 11 member council. If three are absent, that doesn't mean you only have to get the best of the eight remaining. You still have to get the best of 11. You still have to get six, no matter how many people show up. So three people recusing and not voting, those count as no's. So that you know, that might come back to haunt them when they run. All these people who seem to be opposed to the housing issues.
But to recuse yourself because you're either a landlord or a tenant is kind of ridiculous, because that's like saying, I'm not going to vote for Medicare for All because I might get sick someday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, definitely. Exactly. I know. It's just, it's preposterous. But, you know, I can't challenge it. I wouldn't challenge it. It's not, you know, but like I said, it's, and you were there when one person raised that kind of issue in the meeting. And I was happy to see that, because it would have been out of place for me to raise that. But so we'll see. I think we have the votes. I don't want to get too cocky or confident, but I think we have them.
And yeah. The vote is tomorrow?
Tomorrow yep. night.
Tomorrow the 15th.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Elliot from HCHC.
Yeah.
That's
the Housing Coalition.
Yes. And he was saying Catskill.
I'm an old-time programmer. I always know to give out the actual names of the acronyms. But go ahead, sorry.
Nice.
Let me your show.
Oh, no, you're great. Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, they're great, and Elliot's great. We were chatting. Catskill is voting in the second week of November, so this will be before Catskill votes, and I think you just raised a lot of really good points when Catskill goes.
Nice. I don't have a... I can see Catskill changing.
It is voting for the town of Catskill. They're collecting, they're petitioning right now. It's going to be townwide, but the village is like the small part of Catskill, like Maine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So who gets to vote on this? Everybody? The whole?
Yeah.
The whole
yeah,
thing?
The town. Well, yeah, the whole thing. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I will look this up and maybe update this after we're done. I was helping them with some data entry, and I believe based on that, it's townwide. But there's been some pretty vocal opposition thus far. So TBD. Because it's townwide, I think the village is more
for it.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
But
that's what I was trying to say. Yeah. I mean, because that's the part that's really had this influx of new people as well as young people, as well as already was, you know, in the right place to a large degree.
Yeah.
It's when you get to the other parts of Catskill that you sort of, you know, are more likely to see your heavy Trump signs and stuff like that.
Yes. It's an uphill climb, but it's not an impossible one.
Not impossible. Well, you know, and you got to wonder, even if just because someone's a Trumper, they still might be a renter, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Definitely. The housing crisis does not only affect leftists, you know?
I think I'm more interested in those people, certain groups of the people who do vote for him, who seem to be voting against what I would perceive as their interest, you know? Because you can't, it's hard to believe that half of this country, you know, loves Donald Trump. We know the capital class, the business class, and the big owners and billionaires like him, not because of him, but because of what he does for them.
Tax breaks.
Right. They don't care about his stupid remarks and everything. They're obviously willing to overlook all that crap. And they probably think he's the Bulgarian he's always been, and they don't care. So that makes a good bunch of his supporters.
It's interesting, though, because, like, I mean, you see it, not to make light of the tragedy that has been these horrible hurricanes happening in the South, but it is also, like, if you're going to, not if, but people vote a certain way, these things happen, they're not able to access, like, I read that there's like a local militia going around and trying to get FEMA out of like certain little villages in North Carolina that were hit by.
I started thinking about, I don't know if any of you guys read the book Poverty by what's his name? I got it right here. Matthew Desmond. He's the same guy who wrote that book Evicted.
I haven't, but I've been writing them down. As you've been
it's called Poverty, comma, by America. And one of the points he makes is there really is a lot of money out there. This is sort of going to the FEMA thing. There is a lot of money out there, and these crazy states don't take it. They don't want to help their people.
Yep.
You got to wonder, are they, they're being screwed and then manipulated by those in power who, don't want them to have access to the money and just help them get more angry and think that the government does nothing for them. The government's actually trying to do things for them. There is money for a lot of these programs, and their state government is not allowing them to access that money. That's what Desmond points out in his book.
Wow.
It's really shocking. And his other point that he made in the New York Review of Books is the pandemic spending just sort of proved everything that you'd ever want to have proven. Like, if you spend this money, it will take people out of poverty.
That's right.
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And people are working overtime for people not to come to that very logical conclusion.
Yeah, right.
You know?
So, once we're all in the federal government now, if I'd started this earlier, I might have tried to go higher, but this is it for me. Bringing it back to Hudson. It's amazing how much I've seen about how things work just in terms of dealing with the state, especially when Cuomo was still in power and the state just ramrodded everything through. We had this, I don't know if you're familiar with the Empire Trail He was determined would reach from Canada to New York City and also from New York City to Buffalo. But I'll never forget when this was my first term and they came down to hold their community input. I can't believe I just did air quotes, but they're so-called community. I know, right? It's a radio. Their so-called community input. And we gave them all kinds of suggestions, ideas, blah, blah, blah. Not a single one was followed. And they just did what they already had outlined.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's
the whole
things.
Community involved, it was just a medieval passion play. That's all.
Right?
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. On the other hand, when you get some of these state grants, it really can make a difference, in infrastructure. So you got to fight for them and you got to plan for them. The biggest problem, of course, a lot of them come with obligations. They don't. This is something people never understand unless they're sort of paying close attention. State money isn't a check, and almost, I don't think it ever is a check. It's always you got to do the work, and then you get reimbursed.
Mm-hmm.
Which means a municipality has to take out bonds, or maybe make a loan to itself, and with that money. Do the project and then wait. And the state, trust me, makes you wait. Now, what really sucks about that is that if you've taken out a bond or a loan or whatever, you're paying interest. And guess what? That doesn't get paid back by the state. So, it's just like.
So you're still in the hole.
You're still in the hole. But on the other hand, if you're a city like Hudson, and this sometimes I don't feel too guilty about it, but Hudson, they like us up in Albany. For a number of reasons, and partly because of leadership, and people don't appreciate this, but Kamal is a great leader. He's got a lot of friends in Albany, more so than any mayor I've ever seen here had friends in Albany, friends that matter in Albany. Not so much Dee, but Dee's done some good stuff for us. Michelle loves us in Hudson, and others up there. The lieutenant governor, big friend of Kamal's, so that helps a lot in terms of getting attention and getting money.
All right. Awesome.
Well, thank you, guys. This has been a
pleasure.
Thank
you. It has been a
pleasure. Thank you.
And listen to the Thursday afternoon show, 4 to 6 on Thursday here on WGXC.
Yep.
It's not political.
All right, that's going to be it for tonight for the Capital District Democratic Socialist Good Time Hour. You can hear us again on Tuesday, December 3rd at 7 p.m. And let's see, if you have an interest in joining DSA, you may join at dsausa.org, where you'll find many levels of membership to comport with your finances. Or you may find out more at capitaldistrictdsa.org. Casey, do you want to make a little correction?
Yes.
Thank you.
The vote for good cause eviction is in the village of Catskill, not the town of Catskill. I had that mistaken. And it will be November 13th is the hearing. So mark your calendars. I believe that's at 6:30 p.m. And also, if you're listening live, which you obviously will be, there's still an hour left or 2 hours left. No, 1 hour left at the polls.
Turn over those ballots and vote Prop 1 and vote Democrat all the way.
If you're so inclined.
Yes, yes. That's our suggestion. That's our mere suggestion.
Indeed. All right.
And so we're going to outro the show with a famous anti-fascist anthem, but this is the one done by Tom Waits.
One fine morning, I woke up early. Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow. One fine morning, I woke up early to find the fascists at my door. Oh, Partigiano, please take me with you. Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, goodbye, beautiful. Oh, Partigiano, please take me with you. I'm not afraid anymore. Partigiano, Bella Ciao, goodbye, beautiful. Bury me upon that mountain beneath the shadow of the flower. So are the people, passing. Bella Ciao, goodbye, beautiful. So all the people passing, and say, oh, what a beautiful flower. Who died for freedom?